ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our special guest is Jonathan Stark, a famous consultant, author of multiple books, who currently helps credit unions increase their member engagement. And we're going to talk about conversational UX, which is chatbots and such. This episode is brought to you by FreshBooks, cloud accounting software for freelancers and small business owners. Are you racing against the clock, wrapping up three projects at once while facing a mountain of paperwork? There is a better way. FreshBooks has been redesigned from the ground up and custom-built for exactly the way you work. It's the simplest way to be more productive, organized, and most importantly, get paid faster. FreshBooks is offering a 30-day unrestricted free trial to our listeners. To claim it, just go to freshbooks.com/UIBreakfast and enter UIBreakfast in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Hey, Jonathan.
Hello. How you doing?
Doing great. Thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Awesome. We're going to start with a short questionnaire. And question number one is, what do you do for a living?
I am a mobile consultant. And but that might sound strange because today we're going to talk about conversational computing. Lately, it seems that voice and sort of text messaging bots are becoming a big deal on mobile. So I'm finding myself pulled into that direction. So it's, I suppose, a subset of mobile consulting.
Awesome. Tell us of your background story. How did you get there?
Sure. I started, how far back? I've been doing development in a consulting manner since 2003. So, you know, what's that, 14 years now? And I was working for a firm back then doing desktop application software for work groups. And after a few years of that, I was managing that firm, and I left that company and went out on my own. And because I wanted to do web development and stop billing by the hour, but that's a different story. And I got a fair amount of work as a web developer. And when the iPhone came out a year and a half later or so, I was really excited by that, and I wrote a book for O'Reilly called Building iPhone Apps with HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, which was very popular. It sold really well and eventually got translated into seven languages. So once that was out, I was getting contacted quite a bit to speak at conferences and work with large clients on their mobile web initiatives and their mobile application initiatives, because really nobody knew what was going on. It came out of nowhere. And that's been what's keeping me busy and keeping me excited since then. Now, like I said, I've been getting pulled into areas of the phone that are less graphical user interface and a little bit more, verbal user interface or a text interface.
Absolutely. What does your typical day look like?
Oh, that's a funny question. I have a very scattered schedule. I don't draw a big distinction between my work and my personal lives. I keep one calendar. I have one email address. So, I don't bill by the hour, so I don't have to track my time. I can work whenever I want from wherever I want, as long as I have an internet connection. So my schedule is very fluid. You know, some weeks I have a lot of appointments, other weeks I have no appointments, and I can just, work on marketing or, my business or outreach or, more working on the business types of things. And other days I'm back-to-back meetings from, 10 till 6. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's very, that would probably drive a lot of people crazy. I have very little routine, but that's the way I like it.
I think I'm very similar to yours, so that does resonate with me a lot. but I know other people swear by their routines, so really, it's a personal choice.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
As a side question, I know you have a book about billing, and specifically, can you give us what it is, what's the title and what it's about?
Sure. I wrote a book last year called Hourly Billing is Nuts, which is sort of about the way I run my business instead of what I do in my business. So it's sort of a meta book. And I've been doing something called value pricing for over 10 years. And so when I went out solo and started my own practice, part of the reason for that was that I had a sort of epiphany and recognized that hourly billing was causing just every single problem our firm was facing and our client satisfaction. Everyone hated hourly billing, and I suddenly realized that it was not something that needed to be done better. It was something that needed to be done away with. So I did that. And a lot of people ask me about it because it's led to very high profits, because you don't have to, you know, you're not selling your time, you're selling an outcome. And if you can find clients that have an extremely, you know, they desperately desire a particular outcome that they're having a hard time reaching, if you can deliver that in 10 minutes, they'll be perfectly happy to pay you a lot of money for it. So that's what the book is about. It's about changing people's mindset and kind of opening their eyes to the insanity of trading time for money.
It's totally true, because if you bill hourly, you're essentially getting punished for delivering things fast, which is not good.
Yeah, why would you ever upgrade your computer if you bill by the hour? You should be using the oldest, slowest, most terrible computer.
Exactly. What do you enjoy the most and the least about your work?
Oh, the most about my work. You know, that's hard to say. I would say the excitement of sort of activating a light bulb in someone else's mind. So when a lot of what I do these days, I don't take on any more coding projects. I used to be specifically a web developer. Now I do more mobile strategy. So it's more advisory sorts of things. And the thing that really gets me excited is when someone is kind of like standing at the edge of a cliff, or they're kind of in the dark and they know it, and they just can't get their head around, you know, maybe the reason they should take this next step or what the next step should be. And being able to, yeah, and I might know the answer, but the tricky part is communicating it to the other person in a way that's going to alter their behavior. So when I can do that and get them to, you see their face light up. It's like, oh, now I get, and it's so obvious now in retrospect. That's absolutely my favorite thing.
I like the way you put it, not just so that they understand it, but so that they alter their behavior, which is a different thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And what do you like the least?
Oh, lugging my computer around. I've been trying desperately. I have a nice light MacBook Air, and still I don't like lugging it around. So I try not to drive. I don't like driving. So I like to, we live in a city, so I can ride my bike and walk everywhere. And I'm trying so hard to get my business to a place where I can run the whole thing from my phone, which would be fitting, I suppose, since I'm a mobile consultant. But I haven't been able to do it yet. Things like recording podcasts and, you know, SSHing into servers remotely. It's just not...
It's right. So, iOS was not created for that, definitely.
No, not at all.
What is your next big thing?
Next big thing, I would like to go... I feel like I've just started my next big thing. So with my mobile business, it's about really going deep into this credit union space that I'm focused on. I've been working with credit unions and people in the credit union space for only about a year or two. Before that, I worked with, you know, companies like Entertainment Weekly and Cisco and CVS and Staples and, you know, like consumer-facing retail brands. But I wanted to go deeper into a particular problem space, and I really, there's a bunch of things related to credit unions that I find really exciting, just personally. I've always been fascinated by the intersection of technology and finances and money, So I just, there's just so much fun stuff happening there that I prefer to be on the front lines of that. And I really like credit unions as a subset of overall financial services and banking, because they're member owned, they're nonprofit co-ops, which is the weirdest thing ever. It's like a nonprofit bank, right? That's so strange. And they tend to attract people who are sort of like me, you know, a little bit more creative, maybe a little bit more crunchy and, you know, hippie-ish. So it's just wild. It's this wild combination of challenges. Yeah. And regulations. That's the other thing. There are all sorts of government regulations that make it more difficult to, you know, something might have a simple solution, but the government won't let us do that. So we have to come up with a clever way to get the same results in a way that's not going to run afoul of auditors. So I guess I just like a challenge. So I went into this space more deeply, and I, you know, but it's still a new thing for me. I'm getting clients, but I'm not solving the big problems that I'd like. So that would be, that's my goal for my next big thing, is get really into the bigger credit union space problems.
What are you specifically solving for them? Are they looking for a technology solution that you're helping to, you know, shape up?
Yeah. So the big thing is that, I mean, maybe your listeners probably all recognize this, but no matter how you measure it, whether it's unit sales, time spent on device, internet searches, email opens, you name it, mobile has completely dominated the computing landscape on planet Earth. There are like 4 billion mobiles in use. There are some only like, you know, desktop computers maxed out at something like 1.5 billion. There's just no comparison. People spend 10 times more time on their phone than they do on desktop computers. It just goes on and on and on. I could list off numbers all day long, but just look around. Anywhere you go, every person, almost every single person walking down the street, riding in a car, waiting for a bus, it's just ridiculous. I mean, the phones, the penetration on phones is beyond things like pens, checking accounts, toothbrushes. It's insane. So even though that is, you know, that might not be, the details of that might not be, you know, in everybody's mind, but if you look around, it should be obvious that mobile phones are a huge deal. But when I go into a credit union, or if you look at a credit union's website, or you look at their mobile app, if they even have one, it's almost always terrible. It's user hostile, to say the least. Their website is desktop only. It's virtually unusable on even a modern smartphone. So what they do, or what the state of affairs is, that, you know, credit unions have, for whatever reason, like many large companies, they've kind of like, okay, they recognize that, okay, mobile is a big deal, but that's just one more thing on our plate. We'll outsource it to somebody, or we'll buy some off-the-shelf thing, and it's junk, or it's the same as all of their competitors, so it's not a differentiating factor in any member's decision. So they didn't take it as seriously as someone who maybe recognized the importance of the shift, like Mark Zuckerberg comes to mind when he just dropped the hammer, I think I want to say it was around 2009. He said, look, Facebook's mobile first, period. Like, we're shifting from desktop, it doesn't matter anymore. That thing that got us where we are, that we bet the farm on, and that we've been lovingly handcrafting day by day by day with 1,000 developers, yeah, that doesn't matter anymore. Everybody, I think I remember correctly, he sent everybody to learn like iOS or Android programming. I mean, Facebook took it super seriously, and they almost missed the boat. They had to buy Instagram, they were buying all this stuff because they almost missed the boat on mobile. Microsoft completely missed the boat. And these credit unions are so far behind, and they haven't, from a strategic standpoint, they don't recognize that they could probably, this is a grandiose statement, but I'm going to say it anyway, they could probably close all their branches, take the money from that, and invest all of it into creating an amazing mobile experience and amazing mobile products. And that would be the path out of irrelevance, which is where most of them are headed.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a great mission. Happy for you that you found that track for yourself.
Thanks.
So let's transfer to our main topic, which is conversational computing, conversational UX. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the slang word for it is chatbots, mm-hmm. Voice bots, anything like that. I'm seriously new to that, and I'm very skeptical. I'm very skeptical because I think that menu-based interactions are maybe more effective. But could you give us a brief insight into the industry as you've faced it lately?
Mm-hmm. Sure. So the term conversational computing encompasses both text-based conversational computing, like you just said, chatbots, and also the sort of natural language talk into the air type of thing like Siri or Alexa. So you're right on the money there. And there's like a bunch of factors are all aligning that make these sorts of things possible. I guess they were possible before, but they enough technologies have aligned that they're getting usable in a way that is pretty compelling. So just like Steve Jobs, you know, there were touch screens before the iPhone came out, but when the iPhone came out, that was the premier. That was head and shoulders better than any touchscreen experience anybody had had, in the customer realm, in the consumer realm previously. Multi-touch and the responsiveness, it was amazing. And they're even better now. So we're at the point with things like Alexa and Google Home where you can have a sort of always-on device of an assistant in your house that only has certain capabilities now, but those capabilities are really good. They're better than if you had a human sitting there. So it doesn't take much math to figure out that that's going to just continue to expand. I'm not saying that that's going to replace menu-driven interfaces or even screens or anything like that, but I think computing has hit the point of ubiquity in a lot of markets. You know, probably in the United States for sure, people are on their phone constantly. You're computing, the modes of computing that are enabled by this ubiquitous connectivity are much more expressive and rich than, you know, a mouse and a keyboard with a big honking monitor. So there are certain types of work that I think will, or certain types of work's how I think of it because I'm always doing like a B2B, but it's not just work, it's all interactions, but there's a certain class of interactions that will be enabled that will allow people to do work in new ways, new kinds of work. So that it's really hard to make a PowerPoint presentation with a voice interface. But what's a PowerPoint presentation for? It's for communicating information and changing people's minds and, you know, kind of convincing them of something. Well, can't you do that in a conversational way? Yeah, maybe you can. Maybe there's some new kind of voice presentation that's created. That's kind of a bad example. But the point that I'm trying to make is that to do the kinds of things that most people are used to doing on a laptop with voice probably makes little sense. There's probably a very small number of applicable use cases. But what it does do is it opens up a realm for entirely new kinds of experiences that people are just beginning to conceive.
So what is the main benefit of it? Since conversational interfaces are and products are harder and more expensive and more complex to build, what is the main benefit that the user gains that instead of seeing a menu on screen, they're all of a sudden facing, you know, eternity and empty space and they can just think of whatever they want? What is the main benefit? Because it might be scary from my UX point of view.
Yes. So the thing about it that there's two sides to that. So from someone who's used to making graphical user interfaces, me included, it's exactly what you just said. It's like you're staring into the abyss. Like I have no way to guide the beginning of the interaction or any piece of the interaction. You know, there's no, in a sense, it's easier because there's less to... In a meeting with a group of people, there's, you know, you're never going to end up fighting about the size of the logo. You know, it's like, there in certain ways it's easier, but in, like you said, it's mostly harder. But I think a lot of that is because it's brand new and we're not used to it yet. Because the if we're just focusing on the voice computer interfaces, or VUIs as Google calls them, voice user interface, it's totally natural. So like the benefits to the user are, I can just talk to a, I know how to talk to a person. And if the you know, assistant, if the virtual assistant is as good as or better than a human, then there's no problem. You instantly know how to use it. There's, you don't have to put microcopy under your form fields to explain what happens with the data that's entered here, or that, or what data should be entered here, or if you should put dashes in between your phone number numbers. You just talk to it. And it's clear to me, I have little kids. I have a 7-year-old and a 3-year-old, and they spend plenty of time on iPads and laptops, but it was much easier. It's funny to see the adoption curve for them. The adoption curve for them was voice first. No, I guess it's not true. The 7-year-old was touchscreen first. And and but still there's a small but surmountable learning curve for a 3 or 4 year old on a touchscreen who's trying to launch a Peppa Pig video. But it's even that learning curve is big compared to interacting with Alexa. Like we probably have, I have an Alexa device in every single room in my house and my office.
Oh.
And to be able to be on the couch relaxing after work, and maybe there's a fire in the fireplace, and just be like, you know, Alexa, turn the living room lights to 10%. It's just, it's like the idea of getting up and turning on and off the lights is like savage. Like what? You still have to get up to change your lighting? That's crazy. Or when you're going to sleep, you know, you're falling asleep and you can't reach the lamp from the bed, but if you get up to reach it, you're going to wake back up. You just tell the lights to turn off.
So the primary benefit is when giving a voice or a chatbot command is much faster than accessing any kind of controls, be it menus, screens, devices, whatsoever.
That's, yes, that's sure. Like if I was going to, for the user. So for the user, a lot of times it needs to be faster, but it's not just that. Because a lot of situations where I'll, you know, I'm sitting here right now, I've got next to me an iPad, an iPhone, a laptop, and then Google Home and Alexa, and Amazon Echo. And I could check the time on any one of those, but I'll probably check it on Alexa because I don't want to take my eyes off what I'm doing. You know, I'm like, when we were starting here, I had my little notepad. I also use pen and paper, you can imagine, and like a barbarian. And, you know, I was like, oh, I want to write down the date. I don't know what the date is. I could have checked 5 places. But, you know, I'm going to ask because I'm looking at the paper. I'm looking down. I don't want to change my focus. It sounds really, really minor, but... You know, user experience is all about decreasing friction and making, I think that's the big thing for me is like, certainly the big first step to refining an experience is removing all the friction, all the speed bumps, get those out of there. And after living with voice computing, I don't use it for everything, obviously, but I use it for a lot more stuff than I thought I would. So washing the dishes, Alexa, play my book. You know, I don't want to pull my phone out. I don't want to dry off my hands. Or, you know, if Erica's cooking, she'll, you know, my wife, she'll say, set a timer because her hands are full. They're messy. She's got caked flour all over. She's not going to pull out her phone. She's not going to pull out a laptop. So it's not going to replace anything. It's going to augment everything.
It's interesting I thought we were going to talk about chatbots. I didn't even consider voice UIs because my life is definitely not full of them like yours. So I don't specifically think about them as so essential, but I can see now they're can be totally essential in everyday life. In the business world, what the use cases could be for both?
Okay, yeah. Well, do you want to talk a little bit more about chatbots? Because I think that one's a little is actually a little trickier, I think, because there is some UI there, some graphical UI. So it's like, well, why wouldn't I just open an app? So I can from the standpoint of the person creating the chatbot. So let's say, you know, ABCU Credit Union, they have limited time and money, just like everyone else has limited resources. And they're like, well, we could create a chatbot. We could make a mobile app, a native mobile app. We could update our mobile website. We could create an Alexa skill. And they call me in and they're like, which one should we do? You know, which one should we do first? I'm not going to say chatbot. I'm not going to say, you know, Alexa skill, if they don't have like a finger friendly mobile website, and if they're sending out like horrible emails that you can't read on a phone, then I'm going to say, okay, look, focus on that stuff first. That's the low hanging fruit. Everybody knows how to do this stuff. You just need to do it. You just need to be convinced to do it. Then after that, I would probably push somebody over to a voice interface because it's so different that it's almost like, I don't know, it just feels like just greenfield territory, so that all assumptions are off and it's a much more, from a business context, it's so still so unusual to have something like an Alexa skill or to be on Google Home that it's almost like a press release or something that they can say to their members and say, look, oh, we've got this cool thing. It's, you know, it allows you to transfer money and get your balance. But then that area in the middle, the chatbot, is like a weird hybrid of the two. It's new enough that it's really hard to program, and it's got enough GUI to it that you get into these like endless debates, like in design meetings and stuff like that. So it's kind of tricky to go there, especially for a big corporation. That said, the beauty of it is that for the brand, so you're the credit union in this case, for the brand, the interaction inside of a chat messaging program where a chatbot would live. So if you created a chatbot, it would probably be inside Facebook Messenger or wherever your audience has the most installs. It's probably going to be in an app that they use for very personal, private reasons. So this is probably, people are probably going to roll their eyes when I say this, but it's a much more intimate experience. So for the brand to be in my contact list next to my wife and kids' names, it's like, here's my wife, here's my son, here's my daughter, here's my credit union.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a very, very personal space. So actually there is an analogy here. So if you know, people are probably old enough to remember when the shift from desktop design, you know, user experience design and interface design, when that shift moved into mobile and everybody was trying to shoehorn down these giant interfaces into this small screen, and, you know, there's no pointer, it's just this big meat pointer at the end of your hand, and it's very inaccurate and it blocks the view, and all of a sudden we had to learn all these new things, and we found out that, you know, things like navigation menus at the top with drop downs don't work that great on mobile. It's like a bad model. It worked great on the desktop, but it doesn't work that great on mobile. So I used to tell, you know, and people would always ask about push notifications. Clients were always excited about push notifications. Like, now we can send push notifications. Let's abuse that. And whether it was badges or the actual push notifications or whatever. And I would, the analogy that I would make was that if your interface was annoying on a desktop machine, you know, pushy, obnoxious, irritating, that was kind of like having a friend at work who was a jerk and you didn't like to be around. But when you're like that on a mobile phone, that's like being a jerk in somebody's house, in their bedroom. It's much more offensive. Like the exact same behavior in, you know, around the water cooler at the office is probably a much more obnoxious in your bedroom. And now this is another, and that intimacy, that engagement for the people, for the apps or the companies who released apps that did this right, they now dominate the phone. You know, there's like the top 10 apps or something. Most people only use like 10 apps or 12 apps on a regular basis. Those people got it right. And those experiences are, those developers and those designers, they got it right. And those experiences are extremely personal, extremely sticky. It's just completely different from, like, you know, browsing the web on my desktop machine in 1999. So this voice thing, so for a brand to have an assistant that's inside of someone's primary messaging program, that's prime real estate from the standpoint of where their eyeballs are, because that's the, by far, I think outside of games, chat messaging apps are by far the most used on the devices. So why go through the trouble of trying to get somebody to discover that you have an app, go to the app store, try and find it, download it, launch it, go through the screens, now I'm onboarding, and this whole thing, when they've already got Facebook Messenger and you can just stick your name right in there? You know, it's there's some things that are easier about it and some things that are harder about it. But I think what's happening is the certainly the mobile phone, the platform wars are over. Apple and Google won those, you know, iOS and Android, that's it, basically. And the app wars are basically over. Messaging won. So those are the apps that people are using on the phones, and everything else is kind of like a nice to have. And the people are, this sort of move, if it makes sense for your brand, I'm not saying it makes sense for everybody, but if you have services that make sense in a chat basis, like, I don't know, customer service, it's a great way to interact because it's how everyone wants to interact. Nobody wants to call you. Nobody wants to receive a phone call. Well, I shouldn't say nobody, but that's a declining mode of interaction.
I heard a thing about both Facebook app, Facebook Messenger, and text messages that they have insanely high open rates as opposed to email marketing, typically.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which proves your point that they're personal and we pay more attention to them. My next question was, how would you go around planning such a tool if you think of a good use case? As an example, let me tell you a story. Me and my friends, my friend Heidi and Ina, we run a design, a superpower thing every year, which is a content project. And we decided to pursue the path of Facebook chat bot here. Mm-hmm. So I did research a tool and I found a nice one called itsalive.io. I'm going to link to it.
Cool.
And I kind of researched the methods that you have there to interact with it. So it's simple enough, but it's also not, it's definitely not human, because all you can put in is, you know, some very specific comments, also maybe tags and specific search queries, but not much. And also automatic dripping of content. What are the typical, you know, instruments that you can operate, and how do you plan around them when you're designing your product?
Yeah, it's a huge question. There are tools out, I don't know when you said that was, but there are tools out now that are much more sophisticated than what you just described.
Okay.
So, but they're still very under the hood type things. You know, they're very primitive. I don't mean primitive in that they're not sophisticated. They're primitive in that they're very low level, and mm-hmm. it takes like a real geek to work with them, but they're sort of like very powerful. But that'll change rapidly. People will build services and SaaS products on top of these underlying plumbing that companies like Amazon and Google are releasing. But just to use Amazon as an example, if you go to Amazon Web Services, they have an entire area devoted to AI services. And one of the services that they offer is called Amazon Lex, which is the it's three services that power Alexa, their actual voice assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And it includes speech recognition, which is basically speech to text. So you it's kind of like when you tap the microphone on the keyboard on your phone because you don't feel like thumbing out a long message. And you tap the microphone and you try to speak your message, and it does a, you know, hopefully reasonable job of capturing what you said. That's speech recognition. And then there's natural language understanding, which is understanding what you meant by what you said, which is
insanely hard as opposed to the first one.
It's insanely hard. So just to explain what that means, if I say, hey, Google, talk to ABCU, or hey, Google, tell ABCU to transfer $200 from checking to savings. And it says, okay, getting ABCU. And then ABCU says, ABCU here, how can I help? Oh, you want to transfer money. Okay. You know, blah, 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 blah. And then once that prompt comes up, you know, the chatbot, it's not a chatbot, it's more of a voice assistant. The voice assistant is preparing to do what we might do in a form in a website or a mobile app. And the problem is that we can type anywhere on the page. So if you imagine the page being like, you know, a bunch of form fields that need to be completed from account to account, amount, but the user can like just type anywhere in the page, like it's a Word document. That's like the voice situation. So I could say something in the middle of trying to make a transfer transaction. You could say, is that correct? I could say no or nope or nah or cancel or exit or never mind or forget it. All of those mean the same thing. And to make an exhaustive list of all those things would be super tedious. But that's what Amazon and Google and probably others are working on. So they have an entire class of what they call utterances that you can map in a certain context to yes or no or whatever, you know, or a dollar amount.
That would probably be the nope and cancel thing is probably the easiest example. Because mm-hmm. as you said, typing on the blank screen, now we have a set of variables, but they're not assigned to fields. They're just like a massive of information that the program needs to decipher and distribute into specific fields. How mm-hmm. does that even work? I have no idea.
Yeah, there's a product. If people are interested in this, there is I don't know if product's the right word because I think it's free, but if you go to api.ai, there is an interface for building conversational interfaces. Mm-hmm. It doesn't create any backend for you. Like you have to create a backend, but you can think of it as like what do you use? You use Balsamiq, right? To mock up.
For example. Interfaces, yeah.
For mm-hmm. example, it's like that. So you're creating, Balsamiq, I don't think you could plug it in, but let's say you're an interface builder from back in the day with iOS. You're making an interface. It doesn't do anything, but it can. Like it's ready to accept wires plugged into the back of it. So that's what API.ai is. So you could go in and you say, the sort of initial thing, the customer is going to instantiate the voice assistant however it works on the platform. So with Alexa, it would be, Alexa, ask blah 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 app name for thing. And with Google, it's like, hey Google, talk to app name. Mm-hmm. And so that's the beginning. And so it's kind of like having a text chat with yourself, where you're kind of like typing both sides of it. But then you can highlight, just select a string of text in the question. Jeez, what's an example? This is so hard to describe. It shouldn't be because it's all voice. But it answers exactly what you asked. So if let's say you have a string that says,
transfer $200 to Maria White House.
Transfer $200, right. Transfer $200 from checking to savings. Now I can go in and highlight the $200. I can highlight the word checking and I can highlight the word savings. And then it's going to ask me for I think they call it a domain. It's kind of like a data type in a database field where you could say long text, varchar, binary, int, whatever. But you can say, but they've created these sort of like concepts, or they've codified these concepts of like a number. Like this is supposed to be a number, a particular kind of number. This is supposed to be a financial amount, which, which opens up a whole realm of complexity because it doesn't even mean just dollars. So it's smart enough to, it's sophisticated enough, and it's, and you don't have to worry about this at all. You just highlight that. And essentially you're saying this is data input. It should be of this type, which gives a hint to the natural language understanding about which domain should I be searching through. Is this a number, or is it a street? I mean, is this a dollar amount, or is it a street address? So if it's like, okay, I got this clue from the developer that I'm probably listening for a dollar amount, so we're going to translate it. We're going to bend the translation in that way. And then you highlight the to field and you say, okay, this is free text, and then the from account, and this is free text. And the thing that you are scratching your head over, how could it possibly work, is done for you already. Like, you don't have to do that part. It's mind-blowing.
So if you go around planning such thing, considering all of the above that you said, and now it's much clearer in my mind. Thank you. How do you, what common instruments can you operate? What kind of mindset do you have in order to think of such a tool? So you can, assign tasks to it and see what it can do for you.
Right. Well, I think it helps if you've got an established business and you know what kind of things you're trying to replicate. So for me, it's pretty easy because I'm trying to replicate the teller experience, not the horrible, IVR phone system. You know, press 2 for press 3 if you want to do this. Press 4.
That was one of my questions. I was like, didn't we always have haven't we already had experience with voice UIs many years? Terrible phone calls.
No, those were horrible. That's the beauty of this, is it's, well, part of that's the stigma that voice interfaces have to overcome, is that everybody has been trained to hate IVR. So, but this is like the difference between multi-touch and one of those rubberized screens on a gas pump. This is totally better. And the way that I like to approach it, or the way that I've approached it most recently that I was very happy with, for one of my credit union clients, these examples that I'm giving you, what's my balance? How much do I have in checking? When's my mortgage due? All these things are all interfaces that I actually had a developer build a voice interaction mock-up tool just for me. So I could go in and say, and basically just imagine an interaction that I would want to have with my credit union and just make it. It doesn't work or anything. It's just a mock-up. It might as well be written down on a piece of paper, like you might sketch out a user interface. But I would say something like think to myself, I want to know my balance right now. I want to know my checking account balance because I know we just spent a ton of money at IKEA over the weekend. So, okay. So I'll say, hey, Google, talk to ABCU. Getting ABCU. ABCU here. How can I help? And so I'm just typing these things in like I'm chatting with myself, and I can assign name, voices from Amazon Lex, which also has a text-to-speech service that's amazing. It includes automatic on-the-fly translations to 26 languages. So I can just type this out, and I can hit a play button at the bottom, and it reads the interaction or the experience back to me. And I can feel where the conversation feels too slow, or I wasn't sure what was going to happen next, or what I typed actually was kind of vague when I heard it. It wasn't clear to me what the bot wanted me to respond or how the bot wanted me to respond. And it's just amazing. And so it's amazing honestly, it's amazing how sophisticated our verbal communications are, because that's why it's so hard to have a robot do it, because they're incredibly sophisticated. So like the slight difference in pause between two lines, or two lines that are spoken too closely together, it's like, whoa, it's just totally changes the mood of the conversation. So it's actually kind of fun because you've got a lot of levers that you can play with, but it is a little tricky. So so the first thing I would recommend is that people just write out an actual conversation. So it's kind of like a user flow that you might do, but it's just boom, 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 back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're doing that, there are a couple of things that I've found are important to keep in mind. One is you really, literally need to consider the brand voice. Like we talk about brand voice, but now you literally have to think about it in both accent, tone, gender, and casualness, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there's this, it's kind of like, I almost want to have a sarcasm setting. So I can say like, oh, you know, I obviously, you know, a big credit union like Navy Federal, they're not going to have a jokey bot. You know what I mean? They just won't do it, I'm sure. I don't know. I don't work with them. I don't know. But I doubt that they would just have like a hilarious bot like, you know, Jarvis from Iron Man. But I would want that setting. Like as a user, I want the setting for it to be a little more abrupt or perhaps it shouldn't even be a setting, of course. It should just understand that I'm a sarcastic person or I am a fast talker or I don't or I do like having a long chat. It should just detect that from my interactions and respond appropriately. We're not there yet. I haven't seen anything like that yet. But we're certainly at a point where the capabilities that are available almost for free from Amazon and other places allow you to create a brand voice in just insanely literal way. Like I had to picture a specific person I was talking to. I was basically imagining, you know, a very close friend of mine who happens to be a teller at a credit union. So mm-hmm. like the level of there's a certain amount, you don't have to talk as much with close friends because they just get it. They know what you mean. They're not worried about your rude barrier is your rude deflector is down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know that you're close. They're not just giving you quick answers because they don't like you or they're being rude. They're trying to be efficient and the relationship is taken into context when having the cooperative interaction. So I found that it was like, on the one hand, you could create phrases for the bot that were really, really short, which is nice because it's efficient because you don't want to listen like crazy. Like, oh man, would you just get to the end of it? Like, you know, your checking account balance is $1,077.70. It's like, you know, it takes forever. So you want to strike a balance though. You can't just have it robotically short, like savings, $100, checking, $725, loan, $522. You don't want that because now you're back to the IVR robot. You're like the terrible robot. That's not an assistant. So you need to kind of find this line in between robotically short and infuriatingly long,
mm-hmm.
and split the difference somehow in a way that's appropriate.
Refining question. So we've been talking about natural language understanding and the input side of things, but the output side also needs to be humanized kind of thing. You know, the voice isn't just your typical read aloud program. Is it also a service by Amazon that would, you know, read up what you have planned for them?
Yes, there is. If you wanted to, I can even send you some examples after this if you felt like putting them in the show at the end. People could, you know, they could like.
I would love some links. I would love some links for sure.
Cool. Yeah, mm-hmm. I can do that.
Let's do that. That's awesome. So that literally brand voice, is it, would you, if you're implementing your bot, would you have an opportunity to give like, hire an actor and give their voice to your bot, or would you have to use one of Amazon's characters?
It's hard to think of a situation where it would be financially feasible
to hire an actor.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine. I don't think the Amazon voices are extensible, But so for each, there's something, I think it's 26 languages, and under each there's one or more voices. So you can choose, like, you know, and they all have names, but, you know, like Gerent and Joanna, and, you know, Joanna sounds kind of like the Google, Hey Google voice. And they're really good. In my opinion, they're good enough. So they get, they're not annoyingly robotic, and they're not in that horrible uncanny valley. They're just coming out of the uncanny valley. And as the machine learning gets better, they're just going to keep getting better. And the rate of acceleration is increasing. So it's really hard to imagine doing what Apple did with Siri and hiring a voice actress to do all of those, all of that. You know, it's just like, why? You know, don't get in a fight with something. You know, don't get in a fight with computers. Like, if computers can maybe do this, don't let them do it and stick to stuff that computers can't do. So yeah. My advice to a client would be like, I mean, maybe that's possible, but that sounds like insanely expensive, and would just, you know, time to market on that. That could not be something that would happen fast. You know, that's got to be a 6-month project just to do that. And, you know, you could have been to market for practically for free 6 months ago. So it's kind of hard to imagine that.
Right. You mentioned that conversational systems practically don't need onboarding. I would say both when Siri and Google Voice Search came out, the minimum viable onboarding for them was that video ad that everyone watched on their TV, which is like, okay, Google, find me the next, like, the nearest cafe. And now everyone knows they can search for nearest stuff on there. And same for Siri. What would you say about that? Is such sample interaction, like video trailer or something, necessary? Or should it be just entirely intuitive?
What's the progressive disclosure, I think, is the term that I've seen used most effectively. So the most recent project I did, where I mocked up a bunch of interfaces, I did do the first run. So the first time, because we know these are not anonymous people. Like, we know who you are. You've linked your in my case, you've linked your checking account or your banking profile to this assistant, and you've logged in, essentially. So we know who you are. We know you've never logged in before. Or, you know, we know this is your first time. And in that welcome path, I gave them a little bit, just enough information so that they could get the most likely things they want to do done. But then after that, and, you know, at the end, you say, you know, if you need to hear this information again, just ask, what can I do, or how, you know, you can, it's the same thing. You have to, it's, it could be help, or I'm lost, or what can I do, or what should I do? There's, you know, but you just say, you just tag that as a help request, and natural language understanding will figure out what they said, or what they want, I should say. So the first time through, there's a tiny bit of onboarding, which sort of corresponds in a mobile app to when you get one of the, you know, three or four screens of swiping around to say, hey, guess what you can do in here, and you can do this, and this is cool too, and now, okay, skip, go to the app. So, but then after that, that would be super tedious every single time, of course. So after first launch, then I had the interactions be a little bit more terse. And at the end of a typical checking account transfer, for example, I would give them a little bit of information about, you know, hey, did you know, by the way, next time you can just ask that in one sentence, or you can just ask Google for that. So, and Amazon actually does this with the Echo stuff. When they launch a new feature, it will, if you do something in a clumsy way, it will say, you know, when you're done, it'll say, by the way, there's an easier way to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it just sort of tells you. And it's kind of like every question that you, dear listener, might have about in a situation where you're designing a conversational interface, every question that you might have about what to do next can be answered by saying, well, what would a really nice customer service person do for me?
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Because that's the thing you're replicating, basically.
Awesome. I would love to spend another couple hours talking about that, but I think we need to wrap up for today.
Sure.
If our listeners want to get up to speed with this industry, do you have any recommended reading or resources or something for them?
Absolutely. Yes. There's a particular video from Google I/O 2017 that I thought was fabulous, that is a great crash course into really understanding what's going on when we have a conversation, because it's so natural that you don't think about it, but it's the mechanics of what's happening in a conversation and how to and which parts to bring over into this kind of an interface. So that's a good starting point. Google has a ton of voice user interface guidelines that I by and large agree with, so that's a great place. And I think I mentioned already API.ai. There's definite learning curve there, but it is the power is unbelievable. So like the amount of code you don't have to write is jaw dropping.
Oh, fantastic. I think we should finish up with something like don't use conversational UX just because they are trendy.
Yes.
Right. So, I don't know. Thank you so much for joining us today. It was very, very precious. And please let us know how that evolves. We'd love to hear more from you.
Awesome. Yeah, it was fun. Thanks for having me.
Where can people find you and your work online?
You can go to jonathanstark.com. JonathanStark.
Sounds great. Anything else? Can we, I don't know, no. Do you plan a resource on conversational UX?
I may do that. This app that I mentioned building for my own use is certainly something I could open up. It's www.shakespeare.design.
Oh, so you already have a website for that? That's awesome.
If you went there, it's just like a password field, so it's not something you use. But who knows? Maybe by the time this is released, there will be an actual user login.
Sounds awesome. Naming things by famous writers is one of my favorite things.
Like, oh, really?
I really like the idea of text editors called Hemingway and stuff like that. So you just hit my favorite point here.
Awesome.
All right, Jonathan, thank you so much again, and have a wonderful week.
Thanks, you too.
This episode is brought to you by FreshBooks Cloud Accounting Software. They're offering a 30-day unrestricted free trial to our listeners. Just go to freshbooks.com/UIbreakfast and enter UIbreakfast in the How Did You Hear About Us section. If you enjoyed listening to this episode, please leave a review on iTunes. It will help other people discover this podcast.